Across east of England, people are running into the wall Melanie is about to describe. Melanie is fictional, the wall is not. This is their story. In Watford, experienced healthcare workers are blocked from training as registered nurses, while hospital wards report chronic staffing shortages. The expertise exists, the motivation exists, the equipment sits ready in university labs. What does not exist is the Treasury approval to connect willing people to essential work. Here is Melanie's account.
I knew I wanted to be a nurse from the age of 14. My nan spent 6 months in Watford General after a stroke, and I watched how the registered nurses managed her care with this combination of technical skill and genuine compassion that just made sense to me. It felt like the most important work you could do. After my A-levels at Cavendish School, I deliberately took a job as a healthcare assistant at the same hospital. I wanted to understand the work from the ground up before I committed to 3 years of university training. For 3 years, I worked alongside registered nurses on the acute medical ward. They taught me more than any textbook could: how to spot the subtle signs that a patient was deteriorating, how to communicate with families during the worst moments of their lives, how to manage 12-hour shifts when the department was short-staffed, which was most of the time. My supervisor told me repeatedly that I had the instincts for it. The ward manager said I should apply for nursing school as soon as I felt ready. Everyone seemed certain I would get in. In 2019, I applied through UCAS to 5 universities within commuting distance. The University of Hertfordshire was my first choice because I could stay at home and keep my part-time hours at the hospital. Their nursing program had an excellent reputation and strong links to local NHS trusts. When the rejection email arrived in March, I assumed I had simply been unlucky. Nursing was competitive. My grades were good but not outstanding. I called the admissions office to ask for feedback. The administrator was sympathetic but clear. "Your application was actually very strong," she said. "The problem is we have 3 times as many qualified applicants as we have funded training places. Health Education England sets our student numbers, and they have not increased our allocation despite the demand. I tried Middlesex University, then the University of Bedfordshire, then 2 London universities that would mean a longer commute. The response was identical everywhere. Strong application, limited places, sorry." At Middlesex, the admissions tutor explained it more bluntly. "The Treasury sets Health Education England's budget, and they have capped nursing training places below the number of people who want to do the work. It makes no sense from a workforce planning perspective. But that is the constraint we operate within." I spent the summer reading everything I could find about NHS workforce planning. Health Education England's own website listed nursing as a shortage occupation in every region of England. The Royal College of Nursing published reports showing that hospitals were running with vacancy rates above 10% for registered nursing posts. When I called Health Education England's helpline to ask about this contradiction, the advisor confirmed what the university admissions tutors had told me. "We are aware of the need for more nurses," she said. "The budget has been cut. We cannot afford to run programs at the scale the NHS requires." I accepted this explanation because it sounded reasonable. Government budgets were tight. Everyone knew there had been spending cuts since 2010. If there was no money, there was no money. I reapplied the following year with a stronger personal statement, highlighting my hospital experience and my commitment to staying in the NHS. The result was identical. I reapplied in 2021. Same response. By 2022, I was beginning to question what I was being told. Walking past the University of Hertfordshire's nursing building one afternoon, I noticed something odd. It was 2 p.m. on a Tuesday, peak teaching time, but most of the windows were dark. I knew from my hospital colleagues who had trained there that the building contained state-of-the-art simulation labs designed to replicate ward environments. You could see some of the equipment through the ground floor windows: hospital beds, monitoring equipment, computer workstations, all of it sitting unused. I mentioned this to Sarah, one of the registered nurses I worked with, who had completed her training at the university 5 years earlier. She looked uncomfortable when I asked about it. "The facilities are incredible," she said. "But they only use about half the building now. The lecturing staff are still there. The equipment is maintained. They just cannot get funding approval to run more cohorts." The same week, My neighbour Emma told me she'd been rejected from the University of Hertfordshire nursing programme, despite having a first-class degree in biomedical sciences. And 2 years of experience as a clinical research coordinator, she was exactly the kind of candidate the NHS claimed it needed. Academically excellent, already working in healthcare, committed to staying local. When she called to ask why her application had been unsuccessful, she was told the same thing I had been told. Limited places, budget constraints, no money. I started to see the contradiction clearly. The people existed. Me, Emma, hundreds of others who had been rejected from local nursing programs, despite strong applications. The facilities existed. I could see them through the university windows. Barely used, but maintained and ready. The teaching staff existed. Sarah confirmed they had qualified nurse educators sitting idle because there was no budget to expand student numbers. The need existed. Every shift at Watford General, we were short-staffed. What exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that prints pound notes and mints pound coins was telling us it could not find enough of them to train people who were standing right there, ready to work. It could find money to bail out banks. It could find money for tax cuts. It could find money for military equipment. But it could not find money to connect willing people to essential healthcare work in a hospital system running with chronic staff shortages. I started to understand that what I was hearing was not a financial constraint, but a political choice, dressed up as an accounting problem. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to borrow pounds or tax pounds before it spends pounds. When Health Education England said, "There is no budget," what they meant was, the Treasury has chosen not to allocate the resources. When the universities said, "We cannot afford more places," what they meant was, we have been told not to expand, regardless of demand. I'm still working as a healthcare assistant. I'm still reapplying for nursing programs. But I hear the excuses differently now. When someone tells me there is no money for training nurses while hospital wards run short-staffed and university labs sit empty, I know they are describing a choice, not a fact. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was made by people who had alternatives, but chose this instead. That choice has consequences for every patient who waits longer for care, every overworked nurse pulling double shifts, every healthcare assistant like me who wants to contribute more but is told the system cannot afford to let them.
What Melanie experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique relies on unnamed authorities who treat the household budget myth as established fact. Consider how tobacco companies once cited scientists who insisted smoking was harmless without naming which scientists or acknowledging the majority who disagreed. The appeal was not to evidence but to the authority of expertise itself. In Melanie's story, every institution cited economists as the reason training places had to be capped. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation, they were told. But which economists? The profession is divided on this question. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency creation. Post-Keynesian economists have spent decades showing how government spending works in practice. Saying economists say without naming them is an appeal to unnamed authority. The household budget analogy was treated as beyond debate, as though repeating it made it true. No official admitted that the UK government issues its own currency and does not need to find pounds before spending them. The real constraint was never money, but resources. People, skills, equipment, time. In Watford, those resources were sitting idle while officials insisted there was no budget to connect them. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Watford ranks 304 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, published by MHCLG. The constituency has 3,224 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Local organisations receive £38.9 million in total grants, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. every situation is drawn from official statistics produced by Blocked Britain,